County cricket, international cricket, test cricket, franchise cricket, red ball, white ball, 100-ball cricket. At The Cricketer, we care about the cricket you love. And that's why we've launched a brand new app built for fans of the English game. Download The Cricketer app and sign up to our Access All Areas Pass to receive agenda-setting journalism and illuminating storytelling straight to your phone. The latest news from the England camps, a dedicated daily service for fans of the 18 first-class counties, and committed coverage of women's cricket. Download the app today and enjoy 1 month of free unlimited access. The Cricketer. We care about the cricket you love.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the County Cricket Podcast in association with our friends at Bear Cricket. I'm your host, Aaron, aka the Cricket Connoisseur, and on my left for today's special episode of TCCP is none other than Leicestershire seam sensation, Gavin Griffiths. So Gav, first things first, mate, thank you very much for joining me here on the podcast today. It's an absolute pleasure to get you on for a chat about all things county cricket. I have to ask, mate, how's your day been so far?
Yeah, it's been okay. Unfortunately, I caught COVID just before Christmas, which wasn't ideal. So I got out of isolation sort of just before New Year. Just sort of been getting out and about and trying to enjoy sort of the last couple of days of the break before we're back in fitness testing on Thursday, which I can't wait for.
To be fair, that's a nice break, though, over Christmas. It is important, isn't it, to refresh and relax the body, I suppose, after a very, very tough season in 2021. And Gav, I have to ask, how was your festive season? Christmas, the new year, was it enjoyable?
I think sort of as you get older, you realise sort of how important the time off that you get is. I know certainly when I was younger, I found it really hard to sort of switch off from training, and I'd find myself hitting balls and trying to bowl and stuff like that in the winter break. But you know, I just try and tick over as much as I can, get out running. Luckily enough, my girlfriend's got a gym in her garage, so I get to go down there. But yeah, it's been really nice. Obviously, I had to delay Christmas Day a couple of days because of the COVID. But it was nice to be around friends and family. Obviously, we then get a break in February for a week at half term, which is pretty much our last sort of break before October with the season coming up.
Yeah, I mean, it's tough, isn't it? It really is tough. We call it the county grind here in England and Wales. Incredibly taxing. And I must admit, though, at the same time, incredibly, incredibly rewarding. And we love it as fans. I must admit, I absolutely adore county cricket. We may have just had Christmas, but my Christmas is actually coming up. And that is the first day of the season. I absolutely love the first day of the county season. It is like my version of Christmas Day. But yeah, Gav, I'm glad to hear that you've had a nice festive season. I personally have as well. It's been a really, really nice time just, you know, chilling out a bit and spending time with family. Always, always lovely to do that at Christmas and New Year's. And talking of New Year's, Gav, 2022, we are recording this on the 4th of January of this year. And today is the start of the fourth test between England and Australia in the 2021-22 Ashes. So, Gav, obviously, things haven't quite gone England's way, to put it nicely, to be honest. It's 3-0 Australia. We are staring down the barrel of a whitewash at the moment. But heading into this pink test, are you confident that England can maybe salvage some pride and potentially win the game?
I think, well, if they're going to do that, the toss is obviously massive. We spoke sort of off record before the podcast started about how, you know, England have taken a pounding in the press and potentially rightly so. But I think you look at that Australia side, we spoke about Cummins being potentially one of the best test bowlers on record in history. He averages a shade over 20. Mitchell Starc, arguably one of the best left-armers in recent history. And then if you look at the batting, you've got David Warner, averages close to 50. Labuschagne, 60. Steve Smith, probably the best test batter of our era. That is just, and Nathan Lyon, probably the best finger spinner in recent years as well. That Australia side is, especially in their own conditions, it's probably better than what personally, I think the media have given credit for. But, you know, at Pink Ball Test, it brings Jimmy Anderson really into it. I know he bowled magnificently in the last Test match. And I think that these Pink Ball Tests, if England are going to hopefully get a result, you want to see them bowling with a new ball under lights at some point in the Test match. I think that's going to be massive to sort of try and get into that lower middle order of Australia.
Well, you see, that's the key thing for me. I think when it comes to the Australian team, I do think their perceived weakness is the middle order. And I mean, that was shattered, wasn't it, at the Gabba when Travis Head scored that 150, which was absolutely outrageous. Then Alex Carey's followed up with a 50. Australia just have been the far better side in this year's Ashes. But before we started recording, Gav, and before we get into the main segment of today's episode, we did talk at length about the reasons why England haven't necessarily achieved what we would have wanted to have seen from them in this year's Ashes. Do you have any theories, any ideas as to why England just have not performed down under in 2021/22?
I'm a big believer, we spoke again off the record, that sport is massively cyclical. And if we take the England football team, for example, you know, 10 years ago that they weren't great, and all of a sudden they've got this massive golden, well, you look at it, it could be arguably a golden generation of young, exciting players. And I just think English Test cricket at the minute, it just lacks a couple of those sort of generational players that, especially with the bat that, you know, Australia have got at the minute. England went down under 10 years ago with a side of sort of Cook, Strauss, Bell, Trott, Peterson, Anderson, Swan. And there's generational cricketers in there, and that to me is the crux of it. You know, I've seen a lot of stuff going on about county pitches. I mean, a lot of the pitches I've played on, I've played 30 games of first class cricket now. It's not a massive amount, but the majority of the pitches I've played on have been magnificent. I've heard a lot about the timing of the county season. I mean, arguably, yeah, it could be structured better, but I seen Chris Wright put a tweet out a couple of days ago about how the best pitches are often the ones real early in the season, sort of April time, where I think groundsmen arguably get a little bit worried about, you know, weather, so that they almost put too much time into their pitches early season. And, you know, when it gets to sort of that June, July, August time where there's 3-4 games a week, they potentially don't get the prep time that's needed. I mean, we're blessed at Grace Road with Andy, and he's got a magnificent team around him that the pitches, especially the one-day pitches, are fantastic. But I don't think there's any one specific answer. And I think sort of after this series is going to be a massive diagnosis. But I think the stuff that KP's talking about in the press about cutting counties and making it franchise, for me, it's not required.
I would agree, to be honest, Gav. And we have got a specialist podcast actually coming out in the next few weeks revolving around the Ashes in terms of the different suggestions, theories in which county cricket could improve. But I do agree with that. Franchising Red Bull cricket and cutting counties, that's the thing that I just do not understand at all. Because if you look at the franchising first and foremost, they tried this in South Africa. They had these six regional teams. They had the best of the best. You'd have the likes of Dale Steyn, Philander, Morkel, all of the very, very top class talent in South Africa playing for these regions. And yet they didn't win anything. I mean, they did reach the number one ranking in the tests, but aside from that, it didn't really improve South African cricket to the extent which CSA wanted it to. But the key thing wasn't necessarily the talent it was producing. It was the talent and the fans that were being lost, because they went from a provincial system, which they've now reverted back to, funnily enough, which is quite reminiscent of county cricket. But what was happening was fans weren't turning up because they didn't really change the scheduling, and people just weren't, you know, feeling attached to these teams as opposed to the provincial sides. And not only that, I mean, they just cut away a number of these other regional hubs. For example, Limpopo is 4 hours away from Johannesburg and Pretoria. If you're a young kid in Polokwane, you're not going to travel 4 hours to see your local professional side, when in the years beforehand, you would have had one on your doorstep. But Again, that is a topic for another podcast. We'll discuss that in more depth. And we have also got a groundsman from Edgbaston coming on an upcoming episode as well. So we'll discuss the pitches at more length. But Gav, fortunately, we aren't here to dissect the Ashes today. Otherwise, we'd be here for the next 10, 15 hours. Knowing me and my ability to talk all things cricket, we are here to talk about your cricketing journey in the county circuit. So just for the listeners out there, I'm going to be talking to Gav today about his earliest cricketing memories. Then we're going to have a large chunk of today's podcast discussing Lancashire and Leicestershire. And then we'll end today's episode with a classic round of TCCP teammates. But before we get into all of that then, Gav, I want to transport you all the way back to the origins of the Gavin Griffiths cricketing journey. So what were your first ever memories of cricket, either playing or watching this wonderful game?
I'd probably say at my granddad's house, sort of when I was, there's a series that stands in out of my mind. It was about 1999, England played South Africa, and I think it was on terrestrial TV, and I remember just watching it in his house, and I'd be fixated to the telly, and then sort of in the lunch break, I'd go out and play with my brothers and pretend that I was, I was Michael Atherton, I was like Alan Donald, these types of players. And yeah, it just went from there, really. I was always really sporty as a kid. I played football, I played rugby, I played cricket, obviously. And then luckily, my local cricket club, Ormskirk Cricket Club's only just down the road. So my dad used to go down there quite a bit. And I was sort of the youngest lad that sort of played one-on-one bounce and all them sort of games you play as a kid. So I guess I was getting probably exposure to just little games like that from a real young age. And then, around age 10, I went for county trials at Lancashire, and this was a year young. Got to the final trial, but unluckily I missed the letter for the sort of last trial. I was away on holiday in Bulgaria. And then the next year, I got into under-11s at Lancashire. He was in my team. So there'd be Matty McKinnon at Derby. Alex Davis, obviously now at Warwickshire, so there was us three. And then, yeah, just went from there, really. But even when I was sort of playing age group cricket, I was playing in goal for Liverpool at the time, and I was playing rugby for Lancashire as well. So I wasn't one of these people that, like these cricketers that say, you know, I've always wanted to be a cricketer. That was never really the case. It probably wasn't until I got to about 16 that I sort of made the decision that, you know, I wanted to take cricket as a career, really.
What sparked that decision? I'd like to know that, because we have had that on the podcast, because it's important from a young age to have that multi-sports background, because you can bring on skill sets and assets and traits from different sports into your cricket. But what was the catalyst behind choosing cricket as your career path?
Yeah, I completely agree. I think having a background of different sports is massive. Luckily, touch wood, that I've been relatively lucky with injuries through my career, and I do wonder whether my upbringing in rugby and football potentially has helped that a little bit, maybe. I don't know, but I probably got to about 15, 16, and I was still playing football and rugby and cricket, and John Stanworth, the ex-academy director at Lancashire, just seen me train one day, I think, in the indoor school. Just in an age group session, and he rang my dad the next day and just sort of said, you know, why have I never heard of Gavin, sort of thing. Within a week I was training with the academy, and then within sort of 6 months I was in training with Bowling at the first team. It was that sort of quick and that surreal, really. And then, yeah, it was an easy decision from there. Sort of I started to dislike rugby training so much. I just made the decision, and I got picked for England under 17s that summer as well, and it just went from there. So yeah, I put a lot of my sort of got to give a lot of thanks to John Stanworth. You look at the players that he's brought through at Lancashire in recent years, the likes of Alex Davis, Josh Bohannon, Liam Livingston, Aaron Lilly, Jordan Clark, Tom Bailey, you know, the list was Lewis Rees, the list was, you know, we had a second team there for about 2 years that was probably good enough to play first team cricket. It was honestly from about 2011 to 13, 14, it was ridiculous the side we had. You know, and they were all sort of, the majority of them were Lancashire lads that had come through the academy. Yeah.
Yeah, it's an impressive academy setup up in the north. I must admit, absolutely incredible amount of names who have come up and excelled in county cricket. They haven't just had like 1 or 2 year contracts. They're stalwarts for their respective counties. And Alex Davis, fantastic signing for my beloved Bears. Cannot wait to see him in action at Edgbaston in 2022. But you mentioned there, I suppose, about the, well, beforehand, about being a goalkeeper, first of all. And you mentioned about rugby. What position were you in rugby, Gav, out of interest?
I really enjoyed playing fullback, but mostly sort of played outside centre. And yeah, I mean, I probably did enjoy rugby more up until I was about 15, 16. And then I just started to really dislike training. I don't know what it was. Just found it monotonous and boring. I don't know. I enjoyed the game in front of me. So I enjoyed playing fullback, sort of being a positional player. I enjoyed kicking and running with the ball. And then football, yeah, I played in goal and, you know, I was never going to be good enough to make it at football, but I did enjoy it. And, you know, I was lucky enough to, as I say, play for Liverpool for a couple of years. And, well, I say lucky enough, I'm an Everton fan. My dad hated it, but, yeah, just as a kid, as I say, I was just really, really sporty. And that was all that really mattered to me, to be honest.
It's important, isn't it? At that age, in terms of your sporting development, not to specialise too early as well. Because as you said, it can get monotonous. It can begin to drag. And yeah, it's always good to have that multi-sports background. It's something which the likes of AB de Villiers, Kevin Peterson, always mention. So for any young aspiring cricketers out there, don't specialise too early. Just go out there, enjoy yourselves. It's so, so important to not lose the love too early for the game. Yeah. But Gav, I have to ask, with regards to your cricket, why did you become a seam bowler then? Because if you're a goalkeeper, I know this doesn't necessarily work out in theory, but I've heard goalkeepers in football become wicket keepers in cricket. Why didn't you become a keeper? Or why didn't you become an opening batter? Why did you not become a spin bowler? What was it about seam bowling that drew you in the first place?
Probably my size, to be honest with you. I was always like a really big kid. I was probably 6 foot 12, 13, 14. And yeah, so it was probably just that. As I say, when I was younger, my action was very similar to Alan Donald. And I do wonder whether, you know, just subconsciously watching him on the telly, you copy that. Probably spent a lot of time bowling in the games that we used to play down at Ormskirk, the one-on-one bounce games, probably spent a lot of time bowling and not doing much batting. But to be honest with you, I probably was never coached properly until I was 16. So I didn't really know what I was trying to achieve so much. I used to just run up and obviously being a half decent athlete, just sort of bowl it. And it wasn't until, as I say, John Stanworth seen me and sort of guided me towards getting some proper coaching with Lancashire and sort of with the England under-17s that I started to sort of learn the craft of fast bowling and sort of what I'm trying to achieve.
Well, talking of that craft, because I always liken seam bowling, in particular real fast bowling. So, you know, the likes of Brett Lee, Sherbakhtar, Sean Tate. I always liken it to the rock and roll star of cricket. It's the romantic one. It's the one which captures everybody's imagination. Gav, what is your favourite aspect of seam bowling? Is it swinging the ball? Is it sending off stumps cartwheeling? Is it making batsmen look foolish at times? What is it about seam bowling that you would say is the creme de la creme of the art form?
I must admit, there's nothing that beats for me picking a shiny ball out of a bag and trying to swing it through the air. I think I seen something in the press about Monty Panesar saying that Anderson was at sort of Cristiano Ronaldo, Messi levels, and I honestly couldn't agree more. The skill level that man has in terms of knowing how much a ball is going to swing and the angles to use and what line to set the ball off. Because let's be honest, being a seam bowler, so you think of Hazelwood, these types of Glenn McGrath. Whilst they're extremely skillful, swing bowling, in my opinion, is a harder art. There's a lot more to sort of predict, if you get what I mean. As a line bowler with a seam, you're sort of just trying to hit a channel and hope that the ball goes one way or the other. Someone like a James Anderson is doing it in a different way. That for me, I love seeing the ball swing. I love learning sort of how to do different things with the ball. I wish I'd have been taught a little bit earlier. But you know, I'm here and yeah.
It's funny you mention that, because I also love swing bowling. I'm a spinner personally, Gav. I'm a failed seam bowler. So it is quite weird at the Village Green when they see someone 6'3", rather portly, coming in and bowling off spin, as opposed to bowling out some rockets. But honestly, swing bowling, there is something quite magical about it, quite captivating, isn't there? Because you don't know how much the ball's going to swing. And also, we still don't quite understand how it swings. That's the other thing. I mean, you think all of these years playing cricket, and yet we still don't know the specific aerodynamics behind the swinging ball. It does just make a player like Jimmy Anderson, someone as well who I will say in white ball cricket is Deepak Chahar from India. Not many people speak about it, but his wrist position is absolutely impeccable. It is. Yes, great shouts. Boovy. What a shout that is. But again, it's getting that ball to swing, but not getting it to swing too much. It's about setting up a batsman. And again, just swinging it the right amount, isn't it?
Yeah. And you sort of talk about that craft. I mean, we've obviously got Chris Wright at Leicestershire that, you know, he's been predominantly an outswing bowler for the majority of his career. And, you know, his game in the last couple of years, from learning a couple of new deliveries that make him more threatening than just being an outswing bowler. You know, at the age of 35, 36, he's learned a new skill that's took his game to a whole new level, which I just love. I love the idea that, you know, I think the way cricket's going, that, you know, you look at Anderson's going into his 40 years old. You know, that craft, it's, I believe players now can play older than, you know, what they potentially did 10, 15 years ago, with all the physical stuff that's coming in. You know, a guy who's been around doing it for 15 years, someone like a Wright, is obviously going to be more skilled than arguably someone who's a new kid off the block who's potentially raw. You know, and Wrighty, I look at Wrighty, he's got, I don't see any reason why he can't go on for another 4 years, you know what I mean, into his 40th year. He looks after himself, and I think that's what's exciting. He might not be as quick as he was 5 years ago, but he's arguably, he is more skillful than what he was 5 years ago.
To be honest, I sincerely hope that he carries on past 40. I absolutely love Chris Wright. The amount of incredible memories that Wrighty gave me as a Bears fan, I can't even begin to list them. He was just so, so skilled. And him with the outswing, Barks with the inswing, Cheetham with the offspin. Incredible. Champagne County cricket, to say the least. I think Wrighty, if he didn't have injuries, he genuinely could have been knocking on England's door. He is that skillful as a bowler. But yeah, it's just swing. Swing is just magical. It really is. I could talk about swing all day, a bit like spin. Mm. There is just something really, really engrossing about it. You could talk about it for hours. But fortunately for the listeners, I'm not going to subject you to that, Gav, fortunately. Otherwise, we'll turn this into a Darren Maddie-esque four-hour podcast. And I don't think I don't think you'd be too happy with that, because you do have things to do. But aside from swing bowling and the art form itself, I have to ask, in those, I suppose, those formative years, the early years before you became an established player at Lancs, who were your idols in the game of cricket? You mentioned the great Alan Donald, an absolute legend, just the 330 test wickets for White Lightning, a legend of Warwickshire, went on to do some coaching for Kent as well. Now coaches, I think, the Knights in South African domestic cricket. Was Alan Donald the main one, or did you have any other role models that you tried to emulate in those early years, per se?
Yeah, Donald, definitely, as I say, just from watching him on the telly. And then, obviously, 2005 Ashes came round. Flintoff, obviously, captured everyone's imagination of the nation. And then, I think, sort of, once I got to Lancashire and sort of watched people train, watching Glenn Chappell sort of firsthand, day in, day out, that's probably when I started to realise that I needed to know what I was doing. He probably doesn't get the credit he deserves as a cricketer in general. I mean, he was unbelievable. He definitely taught me how to swing the ball out, definitely. I spent hours with him in the winter sort of watching him bowl and him sort of passing on stuff that he probably, I imagine, passed on to Jimmy as well. You know, I know those two are really close. Probably when I got to sort of at 17, 18, watching Chappie every day was definitely something that I used to do.
Well, it's funny you mentioned Glenn Chappell, because here on the podcast, my Lancastrian co-host, Joe Nutsy Nuttall, unfortunately, isn't here today. But we do have this debate on the podcast about England's greatest ever uncapped bowler. Now, I always say it's Steve-O. Joe always says it's Glenn Chappell. In your opinion, Gav, who do you think is England's greatest ever uncapped bowler?
Chappell.
Yeah, there we go.
Steve-O's obviously... I mean, he is Steve-O, isn't he? But I think you look at some of them names that played Test cricket sort of through the late 90s when England probably weren't amazing, even early 2000s, and you think how he never got a go. I can't really work it out. I mean, yeah, for me, it's got to be him. He's got 980 odd first class wickets at 25, and averages 25 with the bat as well.
Yeah, but yeah, he's definitely up there. So there you go, Joe. I know Joe will be listening at some point. There you go, Gav agrees with you. I'll still fight Steve-O's corner, but the fact is, to be fair, both of them you could make arguments for easily. Glenn Chappell, absolutely outstanding for Lancs. Definitely deserved to go, in my personal opinion. And talking of the Red Rose, isn't that a beautiful transition into our main segment of today's podcast, which is your county career, Gav? Because you started off your days in the county circuit at Lancashire, one of the biggest clubs in the country, just the eight outright county championships and the one shared one in 1950 with Surrey. What do you remember from your debut for Lancashire County Cricket Club?
My debut was... made my debut in 2014 in a one-day game against Northants. Right at the back end, sort of at the end of a one-day comp. I mean, it was obviously a massive day for myself. It was I don't want to say a dead rubber, but it was definitely, I think Lancs had been knocked out of the one-day comp, so they played a couple of the younger lads. I think I had a catch dropped in my second over. I think Paul Orton dropped one at first slip, but I bowled pretty well. And then the year after, 2015, I played a couple of one-day games. Did fairly well, to be fair. Got a couple of threefers, I think. And then I dropped out the side. And I remember going to Kent for the quarterfinal in 2015. I felt like I should have been playing. I'd done really well in the second team. In 2020 cricket, I'd done really well. And some of the bowlers, I can't remember who it was, were struggling in the first team. But because it was quarterfinals, I don't think they wanted to make a change. But I felt like I should have played a little bit in the group stages leading up. And then a couple of weeks before finals day, I remember I went into Gilo and he called me in and he said, you know, the chances were that I wasn't going to get offered another contract at Lancs and that I was sort of free to speak to other counties, sort of thing. And that sort of hit me quite hard. And I remember going home and just thinking, you know what, I'm just going to enjoy the next sort of two or three weeks going into training every day at this amazing venue and just enjoying it, really. I think for too long, I'd probably put too much pressure on myself to, and sort of held myself back a little bit. And luckily, we had a block of training for about 10 days before finals day. And I probably sensed after sort of day 5 or 6 of training that, that a couple of the lads was were realizing that, you know, I was one of the better bowlers in training. And I remember the sports psychologist coming to me a couple of days before training and asking me, before finals day, and asking me if I'd ever played in front of a big crowd before. So I don't know. I just guess I had a little hunch that I might be in the reckoning. And then, the morning of finals day, Crofty came up to me and just said that they were gonna go with me. So I think they brought me and George Edwards in. I think Kyle Jarvis had got injured, I think, in a championship game, the last championship game before. So I think he unfortunately missed out. And because of sort of how much I'd enjoyed the last couple of weeks, I wasn't massively nervous. I was just sort of in this sort of zone where, you know, it was what will be sort of thing. Whereas I think in the past, sort of a couple of years before, I was overthinking things. I was putting too much pressure on myself. And I just remember for those, probably that month period in my career, I was probably at my freest.
That's incredibly interesting to hear, because it's a common theme here on the podcast. It's that constant feeling of your place is under pressure. And when you feel that, you don't necessarily perform to your absolute best. And it's interesting to hear that you weren't nervous before finals day, because it is arguably the biggest day on the domestic calendar. I mean, you're playing in front of 25,000 people at Edgbaston. Lancs, up until that point, hadn't won the trophy. They were finalists the year beforehand, losing to the Bears in 2014. But making your T20 debut at Edgbaston in front of that incredible crowd against Hampshire, what do you remember from the day, Gav, in terms of the feelings, the emotions, and the performances, obviously? What can you recall from finals day 2015?
I recall a calmness within the dressing room. I know that Lancs had been there for a couple of years before and missed out. I think they lost the year before against Warwickshire. We had a really nice mix of real experience and youth. You know, I think Ashwell Prince, James Faulkner, Stephen Croft, Stephen Parry. Couple that with sort of Alex Davis, Liam Livingstone, myself, Aaron Lilly. There was a real nice blend of both. As I say, I remember feeling absolutely exhausted after the six overs of the first innings, whether that was just complete adrenaline that sort of took over. And Stephen Parry had me running from, I remember he had me running from mid-wicket to point, because there was one of the batters was reverse sweeping, so I was doing that every other ball. And not a great deal. I remember doing my ankle a couple of overs into the final as well. A catch went up and I think I turned round, and when I was bowling, my ankle went. And I remember sort of the last couple of balls when it was obvious that we were going to win. I think they needed 20 to win off the last two or three balls, and I was luckily bowling the last over. And I remember Alex Davis sort of speaking to me at extra cover. But yeah, just amazing memories. Definitely my best day in cricket. And probably you don't realise sort of how special a day like that was until probably a couple of years later, when, you know, it doesn't happen every year, that. And I think, you know, we got so close to a finals day with Leicester a couple of years ago, where we lost at Trent Bridge and we should have won. And I don't want to say I almost wish, I kind of wish I'd have realised a little bit sort of before we won it, how sort of those days, they don't happen that often in a player's career. You know, there's some amazing cricketers, far better cricketers than me, that have never won a trophy at domestic level. And, you know, I was lucky enough that sort of my first finals day, we came away with a trophy.
Yeah, it was a pretty incredible performance as well, I must admit, and one which Lancashire fans obviously look back on very, very fondly. And I suppose with any trophy, I do agree with that. It doesn't quite set in. It doesn't quite, you know, you don't quite come to terms with it until a bit of time has passed. and you realise just how much hard work A went into it, and also how much hard work it takes to do it all over again. Because these things do not come up often in a player's career. I mean, look at Derbyshire, for example. Look at Somerset. In fact, Somerset are an ideal example. Look how many incredible cricketers Somerset have had and produced ever since their inception. And they still have never won the county championship. It's incredibly, incredibly special. And for the fans as well, I think that's when it also begins to set in when, I mean, it's almost been 7 years later. And we're talking about here now on the podcast as if it was yesterday. They are incredibly, incredibly special moments. And for players, for fans, anyone involved in these clubs, enjoy it. Celebrate it, honestly. I cannot give you any more advice. I certainly have with Warwickshire this season. And yeah, they don't come about often. But when they do, it's remarkable.
That's the thing, often with the T20 trophy especially, it's never usually the best side in the tournament who wins it. It's usually the side that I think back to that Lancashire side. Yeah, we had an awful group stage start. I think we were nowhere near, and then we snuck in the back door. We played pretty well. We chased awfully against Kent in the quarterfinal and just snuck through, and it felt like we were peaking at the right time. And as I say, it, very rarely is it the best side who wins all the group games who then nails the quarterfinal. It's very rarely that. You know, you think of the county championship season, more often than not, with the usual scheduling, the best side across 14 games wins the tournament. With the T20, the way it's structured, it's very rarely the case. So, yeah, I remember when you talked there about how much it means to people. I remember Joss and Crofty had obviously been to a lot of finals days themselves and never won it. And I remember thinking at the time, sort of, I've just come in and just sort of won my first. I think Joss had been to 5 or 6 and not won it. And it meant, you could see it meant the world to him as well.
100%. It's incredibly special. And it's a great day as well. For those who haven't been to finals day, I went in 2021 to watch, obviously Kent eventually lift the title. They actually did, they kind of went against the usual, didn't they? Because they dominated the group stage and won.
I called Kent winning it from 2 or 3 games. They had every box ticked.
We didn't here on the podcast. Myself and Joe got it horrendously wrong. We went with Somerset and Sussex. In fact, I think Joe went with Hampshire for the first semi. Hampshire lost. And then I went with Sussex for the second. Sussex lost. So apologies to any Hampshire and Sussex fans for cursing your team in last year's finals day. But no, it's an amazing occasion, an amazing trophy. And 2022, fingers crossed, is yet another memorable tournament. But Gav, we've spoken there about the good times at Lancs, I suppose. But before we get into the conversation about Leicestershire, your time at Grace Road to date, I suppose I just have one final question, a retrospective question about your time at Lancashire County Cricket Club. And it is a little bit profound. Do you wish that things had panned out a bit differently for you at your boyhood club, considering that you did have that success in 2015? Things weren't quite consistent with regards to starting appearances. You said there, the second 11. I mean, that's just a testament to just how much strength and depth there was in that squad. In an ideal world, do you wish that, I don't know, circumstances would have been different during your time at Lancs?
Naturally, yeah. I think, obviously, Lancashire's a massive club. You only have to go to Old Trafford to realise that. And look at the history of everything that's been. Do I have any regrets? Probably not asking to go out on loan sooner than I did. Because of the nature of the competition at Lancashire with places, I just guess I naturally assume that everywhere was like that. But if I look back now as a 28-year-old, I didn't have the mentality to, at that time, sort of between 18 and 21, I didn't have the mentality to be a Lancashire cricketer at that stage. If I'd have had the mentality I've got now towards my cricket at 18, 19, which some people do have, by the way, I believe things might have been different. but I don't look back with too many regrets. As I say, I was lucky enough to win a trophy there, which, I mean, not many people can say that. And yeah, as I say, I wish potentially that I'd asked to go out on loan sooner, because I probably got stuck in second team cricket for too long. You know, I mentioned before about the second team side we had with sort of Alex Davis, Liam Livingston, Tom Bailey, myself, Lewis Rees, Jordan Clark. There was so many who were trying to, Aaron Lilly, trying to force their way into the first team, that era was just ridiculously strong. And it wasn't until 2016, I remember a second team game I was playing in, and Mark Chilton was coach, and I hadn't bowled in the first innings, and I sort of called him for a chat, and he just said, you need to look elsewhere and potentially look to go out on loan. And luckily enough, I went to Hampshire for sort of at the back end of 2016. I think I went July time. They'd had a lot of injuries. I think Fidel Edwards had broke his leg. Rhys Topley was injured. Gareth Andrew at the time, I think, might have been injured. Gareth Berg was injured. And I remember going and being really nervous. But within a week, I was playing for the first team, sort of 2020 cricket. And I absolutely loved my time at Hampshire. It was probably because I'd sort of in my own head realised that my time at Lancashire was coming to an end. I was in a sort of similar mindset I was the year before, where I was just really enjoying it, not putting any pressure on myself. The 6 weeks or so that I spent at Hampshire was probably when I played some of my best cricket. To be honest with you, I felt that Lancashire would sort of see how I went at Hampshire and sort of, I guess, use that as a bit of a, I guess, like a loan and a scouting thing to see how I went. And I did really well. But when I was there, I got a phone call off Ashley Giles to just say, look, my contract wasn't going to be renewed and I was free to look elsewhere. So I sort of told Hampshire that was the case. And they were really keen. They sort of were impressed with how I was going. And I think sort of about a week before Hampshire were going to make a decision on me, Paul Horton from Leicester, obviously I knew him from Lancs, gave me a phone call and just said what my situation was, and just said that Leicester were really keen to come in for me. So I drove down to meet Andrew McDonald, who was head coach at the time, Wazim Khan, Paul Horton, and the rest is history. I signed there 2016, September. But yeah, as I say, I don't look back at Lancs with too many regrets. I just didn't have at that age the mentality to be a Lancashire cricketer, I would say.
Well, to be honest, Gav, I think that's a very mature way of looking at it, because it is obviously disappointing, you know, having to leave your boyhood club. In an ideal world, you would have a long career at Lancs, but at the same time, A, you got to play for them. That's a lot more than myself and a lot of people can ever say about our local counties, and you won a trophy. You think of Lancashire's long, illustrious, prestigious history. They've only ever won 24 county trophies. You won one of them with that team. Yeah. So I don't think you should look back on it with any regrets whatsoever. And again, with the benefit of hindsight, things could have panned out differently. But then again, in life, everything works out for a reason. And that's why you're now at Grace Road with Leicestershire County Cricket Club. And I have to ask about Leicestershire, because at that time, to be honest, Leicestershire compared to the Leicestershire we see now, were in a completely different position. It was the Leicestershire side which was struggling, to be honest, across all competitions. They weren't really going anywhere as a club compared to where they are now since 2021, or 2020 actually. I'd argue 2020 was when they started to really kick into gear. But what were your first impressions of the Foxes as a club compared to your experiences at Lancashire?
My first impressions were, naturally, it wasn't as corporate. So it was a lot sort of in between how my club cricket at Ormskirk felt in Lancashire. It was a lot. Everyone sort of knew each other at the club, whereas I think at Lancs, it was so massive that you didn't really know too many people in the office. Whereas I think at Leicester, you sort of know everyone around the ground. There was more of that sort of feel to it. I was lucky enough, my first year, we had Graham Welch as bowling coach. We had Pierre De Bruyne, who was fantastic for me personally. And we had a real split squad in terms of lads at the end of their career or coming towards the end of their career and real youngsters. So the week I signed at Leicester, I know we signed Callum Parkinson, Harry Dearden signed. But there was also, you know, the other end of the spectrum, you had Mark Cosgrove, Paul Horton, Neil Dexter, Mark Pettini, Clint Mackay. And we had a huge squad of, I think there was about 25, 26 players. But the reason I signed at Leicester, from a personal point of view, is Hampshire ultimately were interested in signing me, but I just felt that there'd be more opportunity and I needed to know it. At that age, I think I was 22, 23, whether I was going to be good enough to play county cricket. And I felt that being at Leicester, I'd get more opportunity to see if I was good enough. I'm still learning as a cricketer. I'm a better cricketer than I was when I joined. Last year didn't go to plan for me personally, but the learnings that I took from last year are going to stand me in brilliant stead for the season coming up. As a club, we've definitely made great strides. We've got a young squad. We've got a really young squad. It's down to me now to make that shift mentally more than anything from being the young lad that signed from Lancashire who'd played sort of 7 or 8 games to being a senior player that's going to carry the club forward, similar to you see sort of how Callum Parkinson's done it, how Ben Rain did it before he went to Durham, and be a mainstay in all three formats. You know, I don't see myself as a one format of cricketer in any capacity. I think I've got the skill sets to play across all three formats. And I think more than anything, it's a mental shift that I've got to make in my own mind of being a senior player who's going to contribute and win games for Leicestershire on a weekly basis.
Absolutely. Very, very nicely put. And personally speaking, I absolutely love the projects at Grace Road. There's so much fantastic young talent. I love the recruitment as well. I must admit, with the overseas players, bringing in Ramanullah, Naveen Ulhaq, Fionn Mulder, fantastic, fantastic stuff from the Foxes. Gav, just for the listeners out there who aren't quite familiar with Leicestershire as a club heading into 2022, who would you say we should be looking out for from the Foxes heading into this upcoming season?
Rishi Patel, without a doubt. I think he is someone who plays shots that not many players can play. He is supremely talented. But he's only had a handful of opportunities. He's been sort of in and out the side because of injury, because of, you know, you look at the way Lewis Hill performed last year, sort of single-handedly kept him out the side, I guess. But, you know, if he can get a run in the side and get a score early on, he's seen glimpses of it in the one-day competition. I think he scored 100 and probably should have scored 3 or 4. By his own admission, he gave a couple of big hundreds away. Louis Kimber, another one, again, showing glimpses last year, supremely talented. Tom Scriven's come in, great lad, hilarious lad. We've got for the first time, I'd say, since I've been there, is a highly competitive group of players who, you know, if the first side doesn't pick itself. And it's going to be sort of the way I'd see it is a dogfight to get picked for that first game. We are young. We have been sort of in transition for a while now in terms of sort of moving from that side with, you know, when before Nico came in, and, you know, this is now a group of players that, you know, there's probably 22 of us that are ready to compete, the way I'd say it, ready to compete. Obviously, naturally disappointing with the overseas signings that we signed last year. Obviously, Marcus was outstanding. He's obviously moved on to Gloucester, but it's so exciting to have Wayan coming in, an all-round option, who will balance the side nicely. So exciting to see what he can bring. And obviously watching Ramanulla in the T10, it's going to be fireworks, I imagine. So really exciting time. But like I said, from a personal point of view now, it's about myself standing up and putting in performances, which I know I can do. I've done before, and I'll be ready.
100%, yeah. Incredibly, incredibly exciting times in 2022 for the Foxes. I think in particular the T20. I'm a massive fan personally of Ramanulla Gurbaz. I put it up on our Twitter actually before Leicestershire announced the signing. He is such a fantastic piece of business. So, so powerful, so destructive, so explosive. He is going to produce some fireworks at Grace Road heading into 2022. And another name as well, so, so impressive, Rian Ahmed. I think he is so good. His Rongen is beautiful. It really is a sight to behold. He's going to be performing for England in the upcoming Under-19 World Cup in the West Indies as well. Just exciting times. And I'm so, so happy for Leicestershire as a club. After struggling in the mid-2010s, there's this renewed sense of optimism, vibrance, energy around the club. So even though I'm a Bears fan, and yes, Leicestershire at times, I think back to 2019, Colin Ackerman, 7-18. I made the journey for that as well, Gav. So that wasn't the greatest journey home. And England were playing against Switzerland at the King Power. I'll never forget that drive home from Grace Road. Let's just say I wasn't in the greatest mood I've ever been in. But honestly, just a really, really exciting time at Grace Road. And yeah, excited to see what the club does in 2022. Mm. I think it's going to be a very, very fruitful season for the running Foxes. And in terms of the club itself and your time at Leicestershire so far, Gav, what would you say has been your personal highlights? Is there one particular moment, one particular performance which stands out to you above all others?
Well, you mentioned Colin's 7-18. Then that was a magical night. From a personal point of view, probably taking 10 for it. I took 10 for it at Durham in 2018. We went on to lose that game, but from a sort of personal point of view, that was obviously fantastic and made me realise that first class cricket I can compete, and when I get myself into the right mental frame, that, you know, I'm good enough to get players out. And then probably the best sort of passage of a few weeks was probably the 2020 campaign in 2020 when we had no fans in. Again, I talk about that sort of momentum. We'd pretty much been knocked out of the tournament, and we played Notts at home, and we needed to go to Lancashire away, and we beat them both to get into quarterfinals there at Trent Bridge, and that sort of period around the club was brilliant. And, you know, I genuinely believed, I think we had Gareth Delaney's overseas, we were going to go on to win it. I genuinely believed we were going to. If it wasn't for a couple of mistakes at the end, we potentially would have got to finals day. But those moments will make it even sweeter in the future, because, like you say, I believe that moving forward, particularly in 2020 cricket, we've got the skill sets to go further than what we have in the past. You know, Colin Ackerman, Callum Parkinson, Aaron Lilly, Gurbaz, Naveen, Louis Kimber. We've got serious skill set to cause some damage, and everyone's going to be a year older this year. You know, we are a young side. I keep saying that, and everyone is a year older. And I just hope that experience and that know-how will stand us in good stead for the 2020 season this year.
100%. I'm glad you mentioned the experience, because I think it was last year I'll say last year as though this it's now 2021, it's 2022. It was in 2020 that we spoke about the rebuild at Grace Road. At that moment, I think the average age of the squad was around about 24 years of age, which compared to the vast majority of clubs, they're usually around 27, 28. I know Warwickshire, for example, was 27.6 in 2020. So again, as this group matures, develops, and the other thing as well, there is this real sense of pride when it comes to this team. They really want to win games for the club. It's fantastic to see. It really, really is. So yeah, I'm looking forward to it. If you can't already tell, Leicestershire fans, I'm genuinely looking forward to watching the Foxes this season. Fingers crossed as well, we do have a visit to Grace Road again this year, because I need to go back just for some closure from 2019, to be honest. My goodness, that still replays in my head almost every single day. Thank you, Colin Ackerman, for providing me with that memory. But Gav, before we go on to, I suppose, the concluding segment of today's podcast, which is teammates and your aspirations for 2022, we did just have a fan question, or a Twitter question, as we call them here on the podcast, from Dan Rowley, who is a regular listener of the podcast. You alluded to it right at the start of the podcast. You are an Everton fan. But Dan's question for you, Gav, who's your favourite ever Everton player?
Wayne Rooney. When I was a kid, I was at Everton Academy and he was sort of 15. And I'd heard murmurs, obviously I was only a kid, I'd heard murmurs about sort of this lad, Wayne Rooney. And he was, I remember him being around the old Everton Academy. I remember seeing him. And then as you move into the academy, you get sort of free tickets to go and watch. And just watching him as a 16-year-old, just fascinating, just the best. Technically the best Everton player I've seen. We were lucky enough to have 2 years of him, two or three years of him before he went on to United. And obviously being in professional sport myself, you can't begrudge anyone for wanting to further their career. I think Everton got £25-30 million for him back in 2004, which is astronomical amount of money that arguably set us up for the next 10, 15 years under David Moyes. You know, the 10 years or 7 or 8 years since Moyes haven't gone to plan, but without a doubt, Wayne Rooney for just, yeah. And probably after Wayne Rooney, probably Tim Cahill. I just loved, not necessarily the most technically gifted player, but just always scored against Liverpool, which helps, and his celebration as well. He used to run to the corner flag and do his boxing thing. So Wayne Rooney and then Tim Cahill, I would say.
I like the choice of Tim Cahill. For me, one of the best ever headers of a football. Absolutely fantastic. Not the biggest man either. A really impressive physicality, I think, with Tim Cahill, but always the diving headers. Absolutely love watching him. I think he's a pundit now as well, if I'm not mistaken. I think I've seen him on...
But it's someone of like his, you watch his mentality, it's something that Everton lack at the minute. I mean, watching us at the minute, I don't know if you follow football much, but
I'm an Arsenal fan.
Oh yeah. Well, we played Arsenal a couple of weeks ago and we were absolutely terrible in the first half. I think you scored towards the end of the first half, and the second
Odegaard,
half.
Yep.
The second half was a typical what I call Everton performance, sort of flying into challenges, high energy, balls into the box, and we win 2-1. The next game we go away to Crystal Palace and it's the same again. Sat back, really negative. And it, as an Everton fan, it is so frustrating. What Everton fans want is hard work, desire, commitment, putting your body on the line. They've never been, you know, the Man City's, the Arsenal's, where they've got amazing technical players. But as a fan base, all that we ask for is 100%. And it feels like at times, probably since Martinez's first year, where we were exciting to watch, you know, we've not had that. You spoke a couple of minutes ago about recruitment at Leicester. The recruitment at Everton since Mashiri's come in and obviously had the money to spend has been nothing short of shambolic. And you know, you only have to look across Stanley Park to Liverpool. Sort of, they have absolutely nailed pretty much the last 20 transfers that they've made. And, you know, obviously fantastic coaching, Jurgen Klopp, but it's no coincidence that you get your recruitment right, you get the right players in the right positions. And yeah, it's no coincidence.
100%. And yeah, that transcends different sports, doesn't it? You see that with cricket, you see it in rugby, football, hockey, tennis, American football, basketball, whatever. Good recruitment, having that clarity, knowing exactly who you want to sign, fulfilling the role, knowing exactly what niche they're going to fulfill at the club. So, so important. And something which a lot of teams, not just in cricket or football, definitely do need to improve, shall we say, heading into the next few years. I'll tell you what, Gav, you need to go on a BBC Radio 5 Live or TalkSport. If any of their producers are listening, get Gav on for a chat about Everton. I absolutely love that. But moving on to our final segment then for today's podcast, Gav, before we say our goodbyes, we do, of course, have TCCP teammates. So just for the newer listeners who don't quite know how this segment works, basically, I've got an assortment of around about 8 questions, all about the teammates that Gavin shares a dressing room with at Grace Road. So there might be some interesting answers in there, Gav. Just going to give you some word of warning in that department. But are you ready, Gavin Griffiths, for TCC teammates?
I'm ready.
Fantastic. That's what we like to hear. Some enthusiasm, some optimism, some joie de vivre on the podcast. So heading into our first question, and this is a classic here on the podcast, who is the teacher's pet at Grace Road? Who is always hanging around the coaches, per se?
That's a good one. Probably Rishi Patel. Always got a dog stick in his hand, trying to get people out. And also secretly Callum Parkinson as well, but does it in a different way. Probably those two.
Fair enough. I'll tell you what, with Rishi though, honestly, he's come on leaps and bounds, hasn't he? Compared to where he was at Essex, he showed a lot of promise. But in 2021, he really delivered. Again, I'm really excited to see his development as a cricketer heading into the future. But Rishi Patel and secretly Callum Parkinson. He didn't mention that on the podcast, Cal. So that's interesting. Moving on to our next one, Gav. Another classic here at the podcast. Who is Mr. Hard as Nails at Grace Road? Who is the dressing room tough man? Per se,
before he left, Dieter Klein. You just loveliest man you would ever like to meet, but you would not want to cross him. And then going back to my Lancashire days, similar, Luke Proctor, another one, just a lovely man, but you'd want him in your corner if you're having a fight, without a doubt. So probably those two. I'd like to see a Dieter Klein, Luke Proctor fight, actually.
Hey, who knows? Could make that happen. Charity match. We'll have to wait and see. That'd be interesting. I'll tell you what. Who would you back? That's a tough question.
Probably Procky just. Yeah.
He'll thank you for that if he listens to the podcast. Well, always a nice one to get Mr. Hard as Nails. Unlike one of the ones which is coming up soon. But moving on to the first of our musically themed questions for today then, Gav, who is the dressing room DJ at Grace Road and what are their go-to choices of tunes?
Well, there's probably two. Will Davis, very standard, loves a bit of pop music, just local, like standard chart music. And then you've constantly in the corner of the dressing room got Ben Mike trying to Bluetooth his phone to the speaker and absolutely awful. The amount of times I've turned the speaker off when Ben gets in charge. I can't complain with Dave, though. He's pretty standard, caters to everyone's needs. And so Will and Ben, definitely.
I'll tell you what that reminds me of in the old Warwickshire dressing room of about 2019, 2020. Ian Bell was the dressing room DJ. He'd have this really lovely variety. He'd cater to everyone's needs. And then, just as you mentioned there with Ben Mike, Henry Brooks would start to connect to the speaker, constant drum and bass. That's all he'd ever play. So nice to know that it's quite similar at Grace Road. That's quite funny. So I'm guessing Will Davis, the more popular DJ, but who knows? Ben Mike's persistency might pay off one day. We'll have to wait and see. with some. I'm guessing, Gav, that you wouldn't be a massive fan of that.
No.
No. Right then, moving on to our next teammate's question then, the second of our musically themed one. Who is the karaoke king at Grace Road? And again, what is their go-to choice of karaoke song?
George Rhodes. Actually, George Rhodes and Callum Parkinson. So Callum Parkinson's go-to is Westlife, You Raise Me Up. Likes to do it a cappella, actually, so he doesn't need too much background music. And then Rhodes is anything. Give him a couple of Guinnesses and he'll get anything from Fairy Tale in New York, Sweet Caroline. He just loves it. Not very good, but hilarious.
Got the heart. Not quite the talent, the vocal ability, but sings his heart out. Fair enough. We need to get George on the podcast. Yeah, I'm not being funny. George, if you are listening to this, the amount of people who want George Rhodes on the podcast and a cheeky rendition of Sweet Caroline, let's make it happen. 2022 is the year to get George Rhodes on the County Cricket podcast. Moving on to our next one then, Gav. Oh, this is a classic. And this is the one where you will have to throw someone under the metaphorical bus in one of these categories. Who are the best and worst dressed at Grace Road? Who's got the dodgy garms?
Worst dressed without is Ben Mike, without a shadow. He's got these flip-flops that, you know, and you break your foot and you get put in a shoe, look like them. He's at the amount of times I've tried throwing them in the bin as well. Best dressed. Who's always looking smart? Nico dresses really well. I don't know if you've seen Nico dress much. Probably Nico, yeah. Always looking smart. So yeah, I'd probably go Ben worst. Best.
So Ben Mike is not going to thank you after this podcast, is he, Gav?
He's a beauty, though.
He is. And you know what? I'll always love Ben Mike for 2019 when he came in and scored 72 for Warwickshire against Hampshire at the Aegeus Bowl to salvage a draw. So Ben Mike, hey, I think he's an absolutely class player. I really do. But maybe the dress sense needs to improve, judging by that description. I'll tell you someone who I would fit into the best. And I'd like to know your thoughts on this, Gav. Potentially Chris Wright when he's in a suit.
Yeah, very suave, likes his long hair. Yeah, Wrighty, sort of. You don't see Wrighty too much away from cricket, so you wouldn't, because he sort of still lives out in Solihull Way and he's obviously got a young family. You mostly see him in cricket gears. And then obviously around the hotel and stuff, he's in his comfies. So, but yeah, in a suit, sure, he looks suave with his long hair.
He certainly does. I'll tell you what, someone else who Dame Patterson told us this, always in cricket gear, Luke Fletcher. Always.
Really?
Never in casuals. Never. Which I found absolutely hilarious. Same thing with Ian Bell. I'm going to be honest, I have rarely ever seen him, especially in his Warwickshire days. Like, I bumped into him at a golf course once and he was in a full Warwickshire tracksuit. I was like, no, you know, fair play. I rate it. I love that. I really do. But yeah, some cricketers, they're just obsessed. They just love wearing the cricket gear. But each to their own, I guess. I mean, I wouldn't complain. I'd probably do it myself if I was a county or professional cricketer. Moving on to our next one then, Gav. Who is the dressing room joker at Grace Road? Who is always pulling a prank, a practical joke, being a little bit of a nuisance in the dressing room?
Probably Wrighty, to be fair. Highly professional, but when we're batting, he does like a little joke. There was a, I don't know if you remember, there was a back end of last summer, there was a Daddy Longlegs infestation across the UK. They were everywhere, and Parky hated them. So Wrighty made it his mission one session to go out and collect as many as he could in a cup and just put them all over Parky's kit. And he told Cal that the reason that they were attracted to him was because of some smell that Parky had on him. They were all over his kit. It was brilliant. And he was hating it. So, yeah, probably Wrighty, to be fair.
That's a brilliant one. I can't say we've heard that on the podcast. Fair play, Chris Wright. That is A, creative, and B, original. Absolutely love that. But Parky didn't, though. Bet Parky hated him after that. My word. One absolute menace. He was like that in his Warwickshire days as well. Glad to see that he hasn't matured. matured about as well as a baby bell. Right, moving on to our penultimate question then, Gav. Who's the most likely to get timed out at Leicestershire? Who's very slow getting the batting kit on?
If he wasn't an opening batter, probably Sam Evans. Everything he does is in slow motion. Should see him drinking a pint or eating his dinner, honestly. Or Hassan as well. Hassan does everything really slowly. Probably Sam. I mean, if he wasn't an opening batter, I'd worry for him, I think.
He's a nice bloke, though. I will say that with Sam. He came to us on the podcast live from the Aegeus Bowl. He did during the during the 4 days, Leicestershire versus Hampshire down on the south coast. So I'll never forget that. The internet weren't great, but Sam was very insightful, very nice as well. So thank you for taking the time, Sam. And the final question, one of my absolute favourites here on the podcast. Before Christmas, it was I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here. But because it's 2022, cricket, summer sport, I thought we'd go for a summer-themed show. So, Gav, the final one for today's podcast. Who is the most likely at Leicestershire to appear on Love Island?
Probably Aaron Lilly, I would say. Definitely before he shaved his head. He's engaged and stuff now, but I'd love to throw him in because he caused a fight in an empty room. To be honest with you, we've not got many single lads at Leicester. Everyone's loved up. Ben Mike would be a potential winner, actually. He's a very handsome young man, but just for pure comedic value, I'd love to throw Aaron in there.
I was not expecting that. Genuinely, I wasn't expecting that purely because, as you said, he's engaged. That might be a problem. But I think Ben Mike would be a good shout, wouldn't he?
Thinks he dresses well, but dresses awfully. He'd be good value, to be fair.
Yeah, he would. I'd vote for him. Again, well, would I? Not because I don't like Ben Mike, but I don't really watch Love Island, to be fair. It's weird that we have it on the podcast because none of us really watch it, but it's always just funny to get people's opinions on who would be good on it. I think there have been a couple of cricketers on it, if I'm not mistaken. There was the one... Max Morley. When was he on?
He was on one of the first ones. He played a bit at Durham. And Aaron plays club cricket with him, so he knows him quite well. I think he won it, actually. I think he might have won it.
Well, there we go. We'll have to get Aaron or Ben on, won't we? To bring it home, bring it back to county cricket. That'd be absolutely class. But Gav, before we wrap up today's podcast then, I did say we had one final thing to chat about in today's episode, and that is 2022. So what are your aspirations for this season? I know you said 2021 didn't quite work out as planned, but heading into the new season, new fresh start, what do you want to achieve from a personal and a team perspective heading into this upcoming county season?
I think purely from a personal point of view, it's about, like I said, myself proving more to myself, to be honest, that I'm a senior player at this club now. I'm going into my last year of my contract, and I think it's the first time at Leicester that I've had that, which I'm, to be honest with you, I'm quite excited for that little bit of added pressure of almost having to perform, which is really exciting for me personally. I know I'm good enough to win games of cricket for Leicester. As I said to you, I've proven in the past that I can put in the performances. It's more about myself staying mentally in the right place throughout the season. We talk about the county grind and how it's physically hard, but I think more than anything, it's mentally hard. Staying level and having a couple of bad days personally or as a collective, things can quickly spiral out of control. And I think I've had enough experience to realise that a couple of bad days don't define a season. I think I've potentially let that affect me too much in the past. So I feel like I'm more well equipped to deal with bad days, because every cricketer is going to have them. It's just a fact. I want to play in all three formats and be a main player in all three formats. I'm not going to hide away from that. I'm ready to do that. I know I'm ready to do that. Putting performances to win games of cricket for Leicester as a collective. You mentioned we're probably better suited towards white ball cricket. Potentially right. Can we win the T20 tournament? Of course we can. Can we win the one-day comp? Of course we can. We probably should have, well, we definitely should have qualified for the one-day cup last year. So, yeah, I mean, it's not beyond the right realms of possibility for us to win a white ball trophy. And I think we have to as a club aim for that. In red ball cricket, we'll aim for promotion, whether or not that'll happen. We've obviously got tough. The second division is a strong division this year. There's, again, no hiding away from that. But, you know, we'll approach every game to try and win it, whether that be Notts, Lancashire, whoever we play, Derby, Worcester. We know that we've proven in the past we can beat these sides. And like I said, we've probably got the biggest and most competitive squad since I've been here. So I'm really excited. I'm probably more excited for this season than I have for any season in the past. I feel like I know my own game better than I have done before. I know what it takes physically and mentally to get through a county season. And I always feel, in the past, I've always felt sort of after Christmas, you get this almost like an apprehension about the season coming up. Sometimes, you know, people always say, I'm really excited for the season. I always think there's a little, no one would admit it, but there's always that little bit of nervousness towards it. And currently I've not got any of that. I'm really excited to put the wrongs of last year right. And as I said, I just hope I get the opportunity to win games for Leicester, because I know, A, that's what I want to do, and also I can do it.
Well, Gav, it goes without saying, but we here at the Counter Cricket Podcast are wishing both yourself and Leicestershire nothing but the very best of luck heading into this upcoming season. We keep on saying it throughout the podcast, incredibly, incredibly exciting times at the East Midlands County. I can't wait for it personally. I really can't. And also, wishing you the best of luck in terms of getting that contract as well. Fingers crossed that you can secure that by the end of the season, because we certainly don't want to be saying goodbye to Gavin Griffiths in the county circuit just yet. But Gav, may I just say it's been an absolute pleasure chatting to you here on the podcast today. I've absolutely loved every single minute of it. Time has just flown by. I've realised we've just been going on for about 82 minutes. So apologies for taking up so much of your time, Gav. But before we say our goodbyes and wrap up today's podcast, do you just have anything to plug or promote? Any social media channels, websites, anything like that?
No, well, obviously my bat sponsor, Woodstock, have been magnificent since I signed with them back in 2016. I know they're doing some really exciting things moving forward, so definitely keep an eye on them. But yeah, other than that, all good.
Fantastic then, Gav. Well, we'll leave your Twitter in the description. That's just County Cricket Podcast Policy. So if you want to go and follow Gav on Twitter, please feel free to find that in the podcast description. But to be honest, I think that's pretty much it from us two here at the County Cricket Podcast for today's episode. To all of our wonderful listeners out there, thank you very much for tuning in. And as always, guys, we'll see you on the next one.